In January 2023, the total national debt and the debt ceiling both stood at $31.4 trillion. The U.S. government has run a deficit averaging nearly $1 trillion every year since 2001, meaning that it spends that much more money than it receives in taxes and other revenues. Economists warn that a lengthy default could send the American economy into a deep recession with soaring unemployment while destabilizing a global financial system built on U.S. bonds. Investors are bracing for impact, although any debt non-payment would likely be temporary. An analysis by Biden's economic advisors has warned that even a brief default would cost the U.S. economy 500,000 jobs at a minimum. They believe a protracted default would send GDP plunging by 6%, with the loss of tens of thousands of businesses and some 8.3 million jobs when it's all over, almost as many as during the 2008 financial crisis.
A default would threaten the gains that we've worked so hard to make over the past few years in our pandemic recovery, and it would spark a global downturn that would set us back much further. It would also risk undermining U.S. global economic leadership and raise questions about our ability to defend our national security interests.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apostian. U.S. bank failures have raised the alarm on a number of fronts, both within and outside the U.S. In the case of SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, the former chief executive said he was unaware that the bank was in trouble when he sold stock weeks before it failed. SVB's downfall was triggered by holdings of long-term treasuries losing value as interest rates rose quickly, a risk the bank had not hedged. The bank tried to cover the loss by raising capital, but in announcing the transaction helped fuel a bank run.
We know your banks were fatally mismanaged. The next obvious question is why? Why did you let things get this bad? Why did you ignore admonitions from regulators?
Mr. Becker, you made a really stupid bet that went bad, didn't you?
Senator?
And the taxpayers of America had to pick up the tab for your stupidity, didn't they?
Senator, there were a series of events, unprecedented events that occurred that led us to where we are today.
No, this wasn't unprecedented. This was bone deep, down to the marrow, stupid.
When it comes to First Republic, the former chief executive, Michael Roeffler, blamed the bank's collapse on the contagion from the failures of other regional banks and said regulators did not express concerns regarding the bank's strategy, liquidity, or management performance. A total of over $100 billion in deposits were withdrawn from the bank over the course of weeks in response to an industry-wide panic about the soundness of regional banks.
First Republic's financial position and strategy were regularly reviewed by our regulators, the California DFPI and the FDIC.
His comments on the speed of the collapse, Silicon Valley and Signature Banks were quite interesting.
No one at First Republic could have predicted the collapse of Silicon Valley and Signature, the speed at which it happened, or the impact it had on the banking industry. Instead of dealing with temporary decreased earnings due to interest rate pressures, First Republic was contaminated overnight by the contagion that spread from the unprecedented failures of those banks.
That does it for this Quick Take section. Please send us your comments or questions. We would really appreciate it.
So, is there a banking crisis in the U.S.? I mean, on the one hand, let me come up actually with you with this question. If there was a banking crisis, do you think U.S. officials and authorities would actually make that announcement that there is one, which would risk more of a bank run? I mean, the same applies to its economy. At the heart of the U.S. economy, there is a heartbeat, but it's a weak one, from colossal debt to weak economic growth And of course, you then have runaway inflation. They're trying to control it, but it's been a difficult task. We leave it up to you to judge whether the U.S. economy is doing well as a whole. And of course, the banking problem, whether there is one or not. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for tuning in to us, and we hope you liked it. From Mikhail Thakway and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Now let's listen to the second verse of chapter Nur.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الزانية والزاني فاجلدوا كل واحد منهما مئة جلدة ولا تأخذكم بهما رأفة في دين الله إن كنتم تؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر وليشهد عذابهما طائفة من المؤمنين
The unmarried woman or unmarried man found guilty of sexual intercourse. Lash each one of them with 100 lashes, and do not be taken by pity for them in the religion of Allah, if you should believe in Allah and the Last Day, and let a group of the believers witness their punishment.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing the second verse of chapter Nur. Now let's listen to the verse. الزَّانِيَةُ وَالزَّانِي فَاجْلِدُوا كُلَّ وَاحِدٍ مِّنْهُمَا مِئَةَ جَلْدَةٍ The fornicatress and the fornicator, scourge you, each one of them, with 100 stripes. وَلَا تَأْخُذْكُمْ بِهِمَا رَأْفَةٌ فِي دِينِ اللَّهِ إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ And let not pity for them withhold you from enforcing the sentence of Allah. إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ If you believe in Allah and the Last Day. وَلْيَشْهَدْ عَذَابَهُمَا طائفة من المؤمنين, and let a party of the believers witness their punishment. In this verse, according to the conditions of persons, there are different judgments of fornication, but in this verse, only one of its cases is referred to. And as we said, it is the case that if a celibate man or woman commits fornication, and each of them will be flogged with 100 stripes. This is a divine ordinance, and the Holy Quran counts fornication as an indecency and horrible deed and prohibits it, where it says, and do not approach fornication. وَلَا تَقْرَبُوا الزِّنَا, and it counts abundance of avoiding fornication as signs for the true servants of the Almighty Allah. Now, what we actually said in the previous episodes was that the amount of punishment must be measured by the Almighty Allah, because He is the one who says مِئَةَ جَلْدَ, and in intimacy and liaison, both parties must be punished equally, although the function of women in creating unlawful relations is more than that of men, and that's why the word azaniya precedes the word azani, but each of them must be punished equally, كُلَّ وَاحِدٍ مِّنْهُمَا مِئَةَ جَلْدَةً, as the verse suggests. And the last point that we mentioned in the previous episode was that compassion and kindness are inside the range of religion. This is the religion of kindness and compassion. But when there is the need for compassion, sometimes there is no need, and more, and even more, kindness and compassion actually place vice versa. Religion is not only fasting and performing ritual prayers and mercy, but divinely imposed limits are one of the essential elements of religion too. Some people consider the religion as only fasting and having different rituals, etc. But we have to consider these limitations that are imposed by the Almighty Allah in this divine religion. As a matter of fact, it is for saving our society and ourselves, for humanity, if we look at it deeply. Because the verse says, إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ, if you believe in the Almighty Allah, you have to consider that this imposed limits by the Almighty Allah are part of the religion too. على مر الزمان تألقا
وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, when we consider this part where it says, إِن كُنْتُمْ تُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ, if you believe in the Almighty Allah and the last day, we can infer actually that carrying out the prescribed punishments is actually a sign of believing in the Almighty Allah. There are different, manifestations when you believe in the Almighty Allah. And carrying out these prescribed punishments is one of those signs. If you believe in the Almighty Allah, you should not be moved and triggered by your sentiments while you execute the punishment of these wrongdoers. And religion is actually ritual prayers added with these divinely imposed limits. And carrying out the prescribed punishment is the sign of belief in the Almighty Allah, because it is the verse where it says, if you believe in Allah. And punishment, actually, as the verse suggests, must be in a way that others take lesson. That's why the verse says, وَلْيَشْهَدْ عَذَابَهُمَا طَائِفَةٌ مِّنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, and let a party of the believers witness their punishment. And a person who commits fornication, when he sees those party of believers witnessing, he must be both bodily and physically punished. And people's attendance, in this case, is a lever to control the judge and the executor. Actually, believers' attendance should be used for prohibition of committing evil. And this is actually useful in protecting the society. And the point is that in this case, only Muslims are allowed to attend the occasion of execution of divinely prescribed punishments. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
The audience of IRB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
And so how do we increase our light in our hearts? This is what an important part of the discussion is, or the second half of today's discussion is, that how do we increase this light? This light is increased by two factors, very easy factors, right? It's by faith, increasing our iman, but then ensuring that the actions that we produce are in sync with that iman, right? The more our actions are in sync with our iman, the more light it produces, right? And so when I know not to lie and I don't lie, more light is created, right? I know, for example, this is haram and I don't do it, light is created. But on the flip side, if I know I shouldn't watch this thing, but but I still end up watching it, it extinguishes light, right? Like in this world, there's no effect necessarily. But in the spiritual world, the effect that is taking place is it's extinguishing light. And what we have to be careful about is that we may get to a point where all light is extinguished. And at that point, I am in trouble, right? And so one of the ways, as we said, so what we have to work on is ensuring that we have the qualities of a believer. And we act on those qualities of a believer on a consistent basis, so that it produces this light. And this is what brings us to this very beautiful hadith. Again, from our 8th Imam, Ar-Ridha alayhi afdalu salatu wassalam. Salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Where he says, La yakunul mu'min mu'minan. So right away, this is a very important hadith, right? He says that a believer can't be considered a believer. Hatta yakuna fihi thalathu khisalin. Unless there are three qualities found in this believer, right? So we, to translate this to what we're talking about today, the light is created by having these qualities, right? And it's not just about having these qualities, it's about having these qualities on a consistent basis to where it's not difficult for me to produce these qualities. You understand? Right? I can produce a quality of goodness, but if I don't produce that quality of goodness naturally, it hasn't become a characteristic yet. Right? And so until it becomes naturally producing, that's when I've succeeded. But the way to get there is through repetition. That's it. You only repeat good acts over and over and over again until it becomes our tabia, until it becomes our nature that we have these good acts. So what are these three things, these three qualities that the Imam talks about? He says first, sunnatun min rabbihi, a tradition or a quality from his Lord. Wa sunnatun min nabihi, and a sunnah or a tradition or a quality from the Prophet. Wa sunnatun min waliyihi, yeah? And a tradition from his wali. So we need to have three qualities. One that God has, one that the Prophet has, and one that the Imams have. What is the first quality? We'll say all of these and then we will explain each one inshallah. He says, فَأَمَّا السُنَّةُ مِنْ رَبِّهِ فَكِتْمَانُ السِّرِّ. Yeah? As far as the quality from his Lord, it is to conceal or guard one's secrets. Yeah? Number two, وَأَمَّا السُنَّةُ مِنْ نَبِيِّهِ فَمُدَارَاتُ النَّاسِ. And the quality from the Prophet is to be good-natured with people. Yeah? And the quality from his wali, وَأَمَّا السُنَّةُ مِنْ وَلِيِّهِ فَالصَّبْرُ فِي الْبَأْسَاءِ وَالضَّرَّةِ. To have sabr, patience in times of distress and in times of affliction. Allah mentions these two forms, بَأْسَاءُ وَالضَّرَّةِ. Let's look at each one of these, because I think that we can practically take something very simple from this. You know, like these discussions that we have shouldn't be complicated. They should be very simple to apply into our lives. Now, whether or not we have the courage to apply them is something else, right? He says the first quality is the quality of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that is to conceal and guard secrets. Kitmanu sir, right? There are two ways of understanding this, right? The first way of understanding this is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala naturally is the knower of the unseen. Allah knows everything, right? But He doesn't share that knowledge with everyone, right? He doesn't. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Surah Al-Jinn, the verse that I read in the khutbah, verses 26 and 27, He says, Alimul Ghaib, that Allah is the knower of the unseen. Alimul Ghaib. فَلَا يُظْهِرُ عَلَىٰ غَيْبِهِ أَحَدًا. And that He does not disclose His knowledge to anyone. Yeah? Allah is the knower of the unseen. He does not disclose His knowledge to anyone. إِلَّا مَنْ اِرْتَضَى مِنْ رَسُولٍ. Yeah? Except for the one whom He has approved as His messengers. Right? That means there are certain people who Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala discloses the truth to. Even the disclosure of God of this truth is at times partial, yeah, and never entirely, right? So for example, partial knowledge, Allah for example told Nabi Musa, come to me for 30 days, Musa came for 30 days, and then Allah extended it for 10 more, made it 40. Allah always knew He wanted Musa for 40 days. But He gave Musa partial knowledge, alayhi salam. Why? Because that would have an effect on how the people reacted when He left them for another 10 days, right? And so He sometimes gives this partial knowledge to prophets, and He shares this knowledge with whomever He desires. So that's God. Yeah, God is kitmanu sir, right? He hides His secrets. He has secrets. He doesn't reveal His knowledge to everyone. This brings about two points that we can practically apply into our lives. Number one, we all have secrets. Yeah? We all have worries. We all have needs. We don't need to tell them to anyone. Yeah? Except for those who are closest to us. Except for those who are closest to us. Not everyone needs to know my faqr, my poverty. Yeah? Not everyone needs to know my troubles. Not everyone needs to know my hardships. Keep it between you and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the ones who are closest to you, like your spouse, your parents maybe, your children maybe, right? But besides that, it's not knowledge that others need to have about me. I think sometimes in the translation of this, right, what we begin to display in our communication about our difficulties to others is that we are displaying that we are not satisfied with God's lot for us. Like, I wish it was different. And I'm expecting you to change it when Allah has put me in this situation. Right? And so this is an important point for us to keep in mind. Don't share everything with everyone. Keep it private. It's important that we keep it private. And another extension of that is that, look, we all have baggage. Okay? We all have a past, we all have history, we all have sins that we're not proud of. You don't need to share that with anyone. Yeah? Don't ever share that with anyone. Like, I know psychologically it feels good to share one's burdens. This is why counselors and psychologists and psychiatrists exist, right? Because it helps. There's no doubt that it helps, right? Illa man irtada, except for those who are close to you, who can help you. Right? In Islam, you know, we don't have a confessional system. Right? We don't have a system where you come to me and say, Shaykh, this is my sin.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
Salam. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me.
Gate is still open. I am now at the airport and I'm late as always. I'm going to travel to the holy city of Mashhad in order to go on a pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza on his birth anniversary. I'll pray for you. The holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, is located in Mashhad, Khorasan Razavi province, northeastern Iran. This shrine has long been by far the most visited religious destination in Iran, attracting millions of domestic and international pilgrims each year. The holy shrine of Imam Reza in Mashhad is a complex which contains the mausoleum of Imam Reza, peace upon him, the 8th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Also contained within the complex are the Goharshad Mosque, a museum, a library, 4 seminaries, a cemetery, the Razavi University of Islamic Sciences, a dining hall for pilgrims, vast prayer halls, and other buildings. Imam Reza's holy shrine is the most significant element giving identity to the urban area of Mashhad. The spiritual tradition of pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, has been registered on the National Intangible Cultural Heritage List by Iran's Ministry of Cultural Heritage, Tourism, and Handicrafts. I am in my hotel room. I had a nice flight and it feels great to be here in this spiritual atmosphere. This is one of my special trips ever. It's unique because it's more a spiritual one. To make a pilgrimage to the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him. 2 days later, it happens to be the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, so I chose this date for my trip. You know, every year, on the occasion of the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, Mashhad gets brimmed over with so many domestic and foreign pilgrims. It's worth it being here, though. So I take a little rest and then I get ready to go on a pilgrimage to the holy shrine. I've caught a taxi to the holy shrine of Imam Reza. This city is full of positive energy. The shops are open until late at night, selling special souvenirs of Mashhad. Everything is lively in this city. Golden Dome Shrine is appearing. Assalamu alaikum, Ya Ali ibn Musa Reza. I can't believe I finally reached here. Thank God. It's so beautiful in here. On the occasion of the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, peace upon him, the holy shrine is decorated with flowers and colorful lights. It's so great. More than 300,000 flowers donated by flower growers throughout Iran have been used to decorate the holy shrine. and the flag of the dome of the holy shrine of Imam Reza will change on the anniversary of his birth. Ceremonies of the day of the birth anniversary include poetry reading and performances, and being covered live by Iranian national TV and social networks of the Holy Shrine during the ceremony. Here you can see people from all walks of life, from different Iranian cities and even different nationalities, Arabs, Indians, Africans, from all over the world. They all have come here to pay homage to this peerless personality, to Ali ibn Musa Reza, peace upon him. I'd better talk less and start reciting the special salutation of Imam Reza, peace upon him.
Allahumma salli ala Ali ibn Musa Reza al-Murtaza, al-Imam al-Taqi al-Nabi, wa hujjatika ala man fawq al-ard ومن تحت الثرى يا الصديق الشهيد صلاة كثيرة تامة زاكية متواصلة متواترة مترادفة يا ليس على أحد من أوليائه.
Actually, I don't change any place in the world with this patch of paradise. Much has been said about the good morals of Imam Reza, which is a lesson for us. For example, he never hurt others with his words. He did not interrupt anyone while speaking. He helped the needy a lot. He always had a smiling face. He never laughed with a loud voice. He always visited the patients. He was patient as well, and etc. These were just a few examples related to this personality, and there are many lessons for us to learn. Heartiest congratulations on the auspicious birth anniversary of Imam Reza, peace upon him.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program of Viewpoints. I am Bita, the host of today's episode, and here with me there are two dear guest speakers, Brother Ali and Brother Hassani. Assalamu alaikum, brothers.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, as we talked up to here, we know that the Palestinian people are under oppression from the Israeli country and Zionism. And wherever there is a conflict, there is a past between two people. We have to find for the dark side and the bright side. And as we know here in this story, Israel is the dark side of the scene. So if you are the dark side, you have to commit some crimes to achieve this actually position in this battlefield. And I want you to elaborate more the crimes of Israel and the things that they committed to achieve to this position in this battlefield. So, Brother Hassani, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, the crimes which were committed by the Zionist criminals during the historic events of Gaza, the massacres of civilians, the destructions of defenseless homes, the impaling of young infants, the bombing of schools and mosques, the use of phosphorus bombs and outlawed weapons, like, you know, there are a lot of crimes. These crimes lasted for several years, and there are many other numerous crimes. So this proved that the savage and criminal nature of the leaders of the Zionist regime. So, and the fake Zionist state that have not changed in the least since the early decades. It hasn't changed at all. So, you know, so there's still these crimes to be seen. And exactly the same policies and the same brutal and ruthless nature which gave rise to such tragedies as those of, you know, you see the examples, like we get the news daily, you know, about the crimes in Israel, in Palestine. So still this ruled the dark hearts and minds and thoughts today.
Yeah.
So they're still being continued.
Thank you. So, what about you, Brother Ali?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Before diving into the question, I'd like to differentiate between Zionism and Judaism. I want to say that there are two different things. There are some good Jewish brothers and sisters who are real believers, and they have nothing to do with Zionism.
Of course.
When we are talking about Zionism, we are not necessarily talking about the Jewish people in the world, or even in the Israel. This is first. Second, I want to say that the kind of crimes that are happening in Palestinian land and by Israeli regime is, I think, very, very rare in the history even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have any records, historical records, at least for the last five centuries, to some crimes like this to happen, and the rate of violence I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. On a daily basis.
On a daily basis, yeah. Even I have heard by one historian that he was claiming that in the course of history there was nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
But since I myself in my mind had some cases, I did not dare even to call it, I mean, in the course of history, in the whole history, there was no precedent for such crimes and violences in the history. So that's why I'm just limiting it to last five centuries. We have learned and read about the colonialism and the type of, let's say, crimes and violence that happened there. But even here is more and more severe and more vast. So when we heard that, for example, French army killed 1.5 million of Algerian people during one or 2 years. Or we have heard that, let's say, British people, British government killed how many people, for example, in that African country or in the other Asian country.
Right.
So we have too many records of such crimes and violences, but we can confess that whatever is happening now in the Palestine is even more severe and more dreadful than that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one side. But more sad, but more dreadful, is the silence of Western countries and the so-called followers of human rights.
Mm-hmm.
So how come? Aren't the people who are living in Palestine or in that area human beings? If they are, so why are they silent?
Mm-hmm.
If one person is being killed or terrored in one European country, he's, I mean, they are all condemning, I mean, the terrorists that did that. So how come you are that silent in the case of massacre that is happening in Palestine? Okay, we're not expecting any good thing from Westerners, from Easterners, from other countries, from Muslim countries. So we are living in a savage world that all are silent when, I mean, a wolf is killing and is chewing up the bodies of people and no one says anything. And even more dreadful than that,
is the support that America and U.S. is making, and the support is that U.S. is giving to Israel to claim that they are defending their rights. What right? Where did it come from? Where did it come from? How can you say that they are defending their rights? Are you humans? Are you, I mean, humanistically speaking, not Islamically speaking. Are you humans? Are you, do you believe in human rights? Do you believe in the human rights of your own people in your own country? What happened to the Davidians in two decades ago in your country when you suffocated, I mean, almost 5,000 of them in a building? Do you care for the human rights? No, these are, I mean, bitter jokes that we are hearing in these days and nights. Yeah, in these days
dark
and nights.
Comedy.
And, yeah. So I want to say that they, I mean, we talked about the bad or sad part of the story, but I want to say that they are going to, now we have a proverb in Farsi. We say that an ant, when it is about to die, it has its own wings.
Yeah, yeah, I know that.
Right?
I think even in Arabic, we have the same.
Yeah. Do you know Arabic?
I don't know. It was in the textbook of my actually previous school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a proverb that says an ant, when it is about to die, it will have wings.
Wings.
Yeah.
So when we see this pressure and this, let's say, massacre that is actually aggravated day by day in mm-hmm. Israel, it yeah. means that it is, inshallah,
the
hopefully, the near-death time of the Israel.
Inshallah.
And it will be so, hopefully. So they are putting all these pressures on the Palestinians to threaten them, but it will actually... It will make them stronger. But it will make them stronger, hopefully. And we are hopeful, as we have seen... day in and day out, we have seen this strength has shown itself, and it is being seen in the behavior of the Palestinian combatant in the Palestinian area, the Palestinian land.
Thank you, Brother Ali. Actually, you answered two of my questions that I wanted to ask here. The first, you talked about Israeli people and the differentiation between Judaism and Zionism, which is really important to keep in mind here. And also, you answered this question that are they stronger than ever or not? And what does that mean, this strength? And you answered beautifully this question that it may be the sign that they are near to their end.
Right.
And these are actually decade. But a question that is not answered here yet is that what is the root, what is the reason of this crime? And why, if there is a special root or reason for these crimes, Israel is still declining and just not accepting these kind of things that they are committing. Brother Sinan Amalier.
Before actually answering the main question, I would like to point out to something that...
Yeah.
Are they actually stronger when you asked? As we can see, according to the analysis and the news and everything at the reality, we see the decline of Israel. So it definitely doesn't mean they're stronger, they're getting stronger. But yeah, it sure means that, you know, of course, due to the technological advances have made their crimes much bigger. That's due to the technology and like compared to the previous early years. So their crimes are now on a bigger scale, but it doesn't mean that they have become stronger. So, and for the next question, like the reason behind these crimes, I would like to quote here Ayatollah Khamenei. He mentions in his book, The Palestine. He says that, you know, the reason and the purpose behind committing these crimes is that they want to make two things clear to the people of the world. One thing is that this cancerous tumor should be preserved at any price. Another thing is that they want to convince the world that it is faced with coercion and bullying and that they do not care what is said about them.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, they don't care about like whatever is being told to them. So also we have, as brother has already mentioned, you know, that the countries, they don't really care what Israel does. And Israel really doesn't care about brother also pointed towards the human rights. So mm-hmm. they don't really care about the human rights as such. And so this is to say that they want to convince the people of the world that no kind of reasoning and no kind of action will be successful against their evil thoughts and their evil plannings.
Yeah. Brother Ali, do you have to...
Yes, there is another point that I wanted to say with regard to the silence of the world.
International
arena. We have to add one more dimension to that, and the silence of Muslim Ummah. But we have to differentiate between this silence and the other silence. The silence of Muslim Ummah is not due to their indifference towards the issue. It is due to lack of good leaders in Islamic world rather than the people. So we have to differentiate between this silence of people with regard to the crimes that is happening in Palestine and the ones that we see from the West. From the West, I mean, naturally, based on their claims and whatever they show as slogans, that they have deafened the ears of the whole world, that we are the defenders of human rights, and they are in reality vice versa. But the Muslims do not dare to say anything in front of, I mean, with regard to the pressure that comes to them from the side of their governments.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in some neighboring countries, Islamic neighboring countries, which of them can come, for example, into streets and, let's say, show this disagreement or objection with Israel crimes? Some countries we have, for example, we have some countries in the Islam world that their stance is really outstanding, but they're quite silent in these areas, in these issues. Have we ever heard of any demonstrations, any riots, or any demonstrations or any slogans against Israel there? No. But it might be even the center of the Islamic Ummah, I mean, from physically speaking, right? Or another Islamic country, which is the neighbor of Palestine. I mean, they, in order to protect the Palestinians, they stop closing their borders with Palestine.
So they're letting the Palestinians in.
So is it really the stance of the people? No. It is the state stance of the, I mean, due to the useless or coward leaders of their countries. So why should they be indifferent? Why should they be indifferent towards the crime that comes to the people there? But the people in Islamic Ummah actually are silent, and the reason is this. But if you want to see the exact idea of the people, Muslims, about the Israel and the crimes that is happening there, go and perform what you had and ask your Muslim brothers and sisters there to know what the Islam world thinks.
And inshallah, one day we'll defeat, with the help of Allah and the support of Allah behind us, we'll defeat these dark side of the story, and the sun will shine brighter than every day. Thank you for listening to us, dear listeners. And that was all the time we had for today's episode. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Waalaikumsalam.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Father, to wipe away my tears, that's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart, I never have any doubt. The Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.